You are listening to StutterTalk.com. I am Peter Reitzis, here with Dr. Greg Grapeshot Snyder.
I'm sick, and, man. Can't you cut me some slack?
I'm sorry. Well, we already got an email from someone saying that they love the Grapeshot term, nickname.
So, so that's kind of sick, huh?
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's going to stick. We're waiting. We're going to call Dr. Phil Schneider in a couple of minutes. I want to tell you quickly that right after we recorded that podcast yesterday, my wife came home and said, Peter, on Friday night, do you want to go see Joan Rivers do stand-up comedy? And I looked at her and I said, Rent-a-gay. And my wife, God bless her, she put her hand on her hips and she says, I don't need to rent a gay. I got plenty. and she already had bought tickets with like three of her gay friends.
You see, that's like, it. You see, I'm beginning to think that she didn't really have any intention of attending this with you at all.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so she just purchased them and then just gave you the courtesy invite, knowing full well and actually probably secretly hoping that you would not accept her.
Well, sure. It's kind of like when I say to my wife, babe, I'm going to be playing a poker tournament today online. Would you like to sit behind me and watch? I mean, it's like this, you know, like, yeah, I want to go see Joan Rivers.
Okay. Wallflower, yeah.
Yeah, so can we talk about the very kind words that were said about us yesterday on the Two Jacks and the Hole podcast?
Rock it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they are a wonderful podcast. We should warn folks that they're not raunchy, but they do let some expletives fly occasionally. So
potty mouth.
Yes, potty mouths. They're hilarious. Scott Huff and Joe Stapleton are the hosts at PokerRoad.com. The show is Two Jacks in the Hole.
And show's not really about poker.
It's not about poker at all.
Yeah, and see, that was the thing, is that you kept on like, Cindy, you gotta listen to the show. And I'm thinking, it's about poker. Do I really care? You know, yeah. But it's not. So even if you're not into cards or poker, you might enjoy it.
Well, they're two very clever guys who host these poker podcasts, and they're so good, they got their own podcast, and it's really taken off. I mean, it's hugely popular on iTunes. And these guys, they talked about Stutter Talk, and they had some very kind words for us. They really enjoyed your story, Greg, about going to a National Stuttering Association conference and watch like the very pretty young ladies get chased by all the stuttering guys. One of them had a great comment. He's like, being a chick at a stuttering conference is like being the chick at the Star Wars convention.
Yeah, no, I would assume that's about right. Oh, man.
But they had a serious question to ask us, and I respect the question, and it was said out of respect.
Yeah.
And they were saying that we stutter and we communicate well, and if people are laughing with us at our jokes, mm-hmm. Are they allowed to actually laugh at the stuttering? I mean, and the point they're trying to make is if sometimes black guys or Jewish guys can laugh at black jokes and Jewish jokes.
Sure.
Well, is it okay to laugh at a person who stutters when he or she is stuttering?
I kind of think it depends on that person, you know? I mean, like with me, it's not going to upset me, but it would have upset me maybe 10 or 12 years ago. So, I mean, it's all contextual. And, I mean, some of these situations that we find ourselves in are downright hysterical. Like, I remember a story where a guy that stuttered had a friend that owned, I think, some kind of maybe a print shop or pack mail shop. And he was going to run out for a second to get some lunch. So he said, hey, you know, can you watch my shop for me? I'll be right back. So the guy was like, sure. So, you know, 5 minutes in, everything is fine. And then the telephone rings.
Wow.
So what should he do? Should he pick up the phone? Should he let it ring? But it's his friend's business. So he picks up the phone and he stutters on H.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Ha.
And so apparently the person on the other end thought that the person that answered the phone, the guy that stuttered, was anxious and scared. Why would he be anxious and scared? Because the store is being robbed. So they called the police, and within like 2 or 3 minutes after the call, police come in, sirens, you know, blazing. They come storming in the store with their pistols out. You know, I mean, so that's a funny stuttering-related story.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point, is we're laughing at the situations that arise because of stuttering.
Yeah.
But I would advise not to laugh at the physical aspect of stuttering. In fact, I would strongly advise that. In Walter Manning's wonderful textbook on stuttering, the very first chapter is on humor and the importance of it when dealing with stuttering.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to laugh at the situations that arise. Like, we had Russ Hicks told a story that made Eric Jackson and Joe Klein cry. They were laughing so hard about being at a train station and a bunch of stutterers were getting on the train and one of them couldn't give directions and the door closed. And
exit?
Yeah, exactly. And he couldn't say the L word. And that's hilarious. If you're laughing with the person and not at the stutter. So,
good question.
Yeah, so it's a very good question from Two Jacks in the Hole. And we're going to call Phil in just a second. But I do want to thank those guys again. And they talk about us in their November 5th episode. That episode is hilarious. They talk about the elections. Somehow they managed to do it in a way that didn't piss me off. And
They talk about us at the end, right?
Yeah, they talk about us at exactly an hour and 54 minutes in.
Okay.
It's a very long podcast, and it's enjoyable the whole time.
That's true.
Yeah, so Scott and Huff, Two Jacks in the Hole, check it out at PokerRoad.com. So, Greg, right before you call Phil, can I read his bio?
Go right ahead, man.
Okay, so we're about to call Dr. Philip Schneider. This will be his third appearance on Stutter Talk. He's a very popular guest. Dr. Schneider is an associate professor emeritus of communication disorders at Queens College and has been in private practice for more than 30 years. Dr. Schneider has won the New York State Speech Language Hearing Association Distinguished Clinician Award, the New York City Speech Language Hearing Association Professional Achievement Award, the Queens College Award for Excellence in Teaching, and in 2004, Phil was named the Speech Pathologist of the Year by the National Stuttering Association, and in 2006, Phil was given the highest honors of the New York State Speech Language Hearing Association, and Dr. Schneider is also a spokesperson for the Stuttering Foundation of America. Hey, everyone. You're listening to the Stutter Talk podcast. I am Peter Reitzes here with Dr. Greg Schneider and very special guest, Dr. Philip Schneider. Hey, Phil.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Greg.
Hey.
We have so much to talk to you about today, Phil. We want to talk to you a little bit about the film War Eagle, Arkansas, your wonderful documentary Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story, and we want to get into what I think you've referred to as the body and soul of speech therapy. So let's start with War Eagle, Arkansas. Last week we did a full episode on this movie, so our listeners kind of have an understanding of the basic plot. What did you think of the film itself and of how it handled stuttering?
This is an amazing film. It deals with so many meaningful issues in life. It particularly focuses on two young men. It focuses on friendship. Each of these men has a significant challenge. One cannot handle their own physical needs. They have severe cerebral palsy, and they're locked into a electric chair, wheelchair. And his best friend and comrade is a handsome, physically able young man who really feels that he can't express himself because of the struggles that he goes through with stuttering. And then the other level is both of these men are trapped in their larger lives in a town that's somewhat backwards and limited in opportunity. And then there's also an element of neither one seem to have a father present in the film, and both have mothers who are trying their best. The issues of adolescence, the issues of relationships between men and women, and really the issue of friendship. It's a profound film. It's a film that, after you see it, you're going to be thinking about it, and you're going to be wanting to talk to people about it. And to me, that's the measure of great art. It's sensitively done. It's dignified. The portrayal of the man with the physical limitations was astounding in his movements of someone who has this kind of cerebral palsy, except for the fact that he didn't have any dysarthria, so he's easy to understand. And it didn't occur to me until after I saw the film that how could he have all those impairments on all four limbs and not have some dysarthria. Mm-hmm. But I so bought into the film.
Yeah, right.
That it didn't even occur to me. And it also never occurred to me that he was a physically unimpaired actor playing the part of this young man. The fellow with the stuttering, much of that, and again, I haven't lived myself with that challenge, but they get the point across in ways that I think are sensitive and meaningful. And it's really not a film about these issues. It's a film about life and about dealing with challenges, and every one of us is challenged.
It sounds like you and I have had a similar experience then, because you said a few things that I just couldn't agree with you more. First off, I thought that even for a lower budget independent film, the acting was really, really solid. And on top of that, the thing that impressed me was it's not a film about stuttering or about cerebral palsy. It's a film about two characters. And, you know, what I was telling Peter in the previous show is that when the film was over, I was actually kind of upset. And my first thought was I didn't really enjoy the film, but I kept on thinking about it. And what I came to terms with, it was I didn't enjoy the fact that the characters made some of the choices that they did. And so to me, when it got me to think that much, that is a reflection of a really good piece of art. And I actually went back and saw it a second time, and I really enjoyed it probably better the second time than the first.
I'll just jump a reaction in there that many of us in our lives are running to entertainment to be distracted from life. So people go to the theater to laugh or to see violence or sexuality or something. This film is it's gripping. It's not comfy because it really confronts one with so many important questions about life. It makes you think and it makes you feel. So it's not some place to go if you just want to be distracted for a while.
Right.
The other thing that's interesting and that your listenership should be aware of is this film is based in reality. The two characters really exist. In fact, we're involved in coaching the actors. And the film is produced by the father of the young man who actually has the stuttering. As far as budget goes, the low budget today is $1 million. That's about what the film cost without marketing. And most of the artists up and down the line really donated their services to make this film happen.
Wow.
Yeah, that I didn't know. I agree with you guys that it's not a film about stuttering, but I really it made me uncomfortable. But after it was over, I really appreciated how well it captured the awkwardness of stuttering, like when. The main actor, Luke Grimes, I think his name was Enoch in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He went out on a date with the girl that he had the crush on, and he actually brought his friend Wheels with him on the date, either for support or to help him do talking. It wasn't exactly clear. And as much as that's awkward, I get it. Like, you know, like I think walking in the shoes of a stutterer, you know, like, we do things like that, you know? So it's tough to watch, but it's also very true. So I appreciated how they captured that pain or awkwardness.
That's true.
I think it's an important piece. And it's worth the time and the emotional energy to confront it.
Yeah.
It's funny how things come together, because today we got an email about Transcending Stuttering, The Inside Story, which is the number 4 hit on Google. So if you do a search on Google with the word stuttering, the 4th hit is Phil's movie, which is just awesome. And the emailer, she wanted to know, Phil, about how the people in your movie are doing now. Your documentary follows 7 people who stutter talking about stuttering and their growth and their change and their reflections. Are you planning a part 2?
Well, I'm certainly still chasing and recording as much of these people's lives as they will allow, because the story of all of our lives is not over until our lives are over. And in some ways, our life stories continue even after we're gone, based on what we contributed while we were here. So I'll give you a couple of little flavors of the 7 stories as I see them continuing now. First of all these people are alive and physically well at the moment, as far as I know. So let me start with an interesting one, which is Michael. Michael is a young man in the movie. So the movie, I stopped the footage of the movie 4 years ago. I've continued footage since. So Michael is a person who has one of the more severe stuttering traits that most people have ever seen, which even includes the issue of singing, which is very rare. And he's also unusual in that he's been rather unabashed. And Michael's a person who just speaks no matter how long it takes or whatever it takes. And he's an extraordinary communicator and has many, many gifts, including modesty. About a year, a year and a half, when Michael had just graduated college, top student, and had been admitted to law schools and so forth, something occurred and he started to have more difficulty stuttering than he'd ever had before. It went from profound to unable to talk, no matter how long he stuck with the job. And he underwent a medical workup, and it turned out he had Lyme's disease, which affects the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And that took him to the mat. He hadn't been in any serious therapy in quite some time, but he really became unable to communicate. And it looked like that was going to be a terrible, terrible time, expecting to enter law school in just a few months. So May this thing occurred. His confidence was rocked to the core. And in the year since then, he has worked so hard and so consistently, and again, now you have a man in his 20s who is in law school, is in his second year of law school, who is now able to speak in ways that he never, ever was before in his life. So his readiness for this kind of work hit a new level based on realizing how threatening this condition was. So as I try to point out in the movie, very often the toughest times lead to the strongest response. So that's one update.
Wow.
Shira, woman with blonde hair. There are 2 women in the film, Shira and Karen. Shira is the light-haired woman who has followed since sort of pre-adolescence. Shira is married. She has 2 lovely children, and in fact, both of her children have gone through stuttering. And I've had the opportunity, the honor, the pleasure, whatever, the challenge of helping her help her children. Shira doesn't stutter overtly at this point in her life. She still experiences the stuttering in episodic ways. She's not bothered by it. But she was really upset when she saw that her first child was going to deal with this, and then we were able to deal with that, and that looks like it's taken care of. And now she's my partner in taking care of the issue in another child. So we're actually engaged in that now. Alan Rabinowitz, who right now I haven't connected with him in maybe, I don't know, a couple of months, continued to pursue his work around the world and saving wildlife, and in fact had to deal with severe stuttering in his son. And he'd never thought about that. Even though he's a biologist, it had never occurred to him that this was a biologic trait. And he had all kinds of different feelings about it. At first, you know, upset and some guilt, and then thinking, gee, you know, stuttering really was a great thing for me, and I think and hope it'll work out that way for my son. So I'm not sure where that piece is at the moment. Frankie Jones, who really found his voice coming along through singing and poetry and making the movie and helping out with kids and doing good things, has really gone from a person who was hiding and not communicating, and he has become a minister. And he's speaking
really?
Charismatically.
That's awesome.
Large groups all the time.
That's awesome.
As a counselor, mm-hmm. as a public speaker, and I believe last time he communicated with me a few months back, he was on his way to becoming married.
Phil, if I could just bust in for just a second. I mean, it's so wonderful to hear about folks like Michael Lieben and Alan Rabinowitz who choose professions of speaking. And the gentleman you just mentioned too who became a minister, I think you said Frankie Jones?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that we have this speech interruption issue. And we're going to law school, and we're becoming ministers, and we're speaking publicly to save wildlife. And it never ceases to amaze me how strong we are. I want to let our listeners know that Transcending Stuttering can be found at stuttertalk.com, episode 74. We have it actually posted there via YouTube. Phil, how about we take a quick break, and we're going to come back and hear the rest of your updates. Okay, you're back with StutterTalk.com. We're speaking with Dr. Philip Schneider right now about Transcending Stuttering, the inside story. Perhaps the best way to purchase a hard copy of this film, going to WeStutter.org. WeStutter.org, that's the website of the National Stuttering Association. Dr. Schneider can be contacted at SchneiderSpeech.com, SchneiderSpeech.com. Phil, could you let us know a few more updates from Transcending Stuttering?
Sure. I think we have two more. The film ends with Karen in her early 20s, and it looks like she has developed enough techniques to control her speech and speak without much stuttering at all. She worked very hard for that. And shortly after, with some encouragement, she wound up coming to NSA meetings and such, and then decided to pursue a career in speech pathology. Along the way, got married, finished her degree in speech pathology, got her first job, very concerned about how the stuttering would impact on that, and gradually decided that speaking in a controlled way, in a gentle voice, just really wasn't her, that she's a vivacious person, she's energetic, she's extremely passionate, she's very loving. She's just an amazing person, high energy, and decided there was no reason to volitionally kind of suppress all of that energy in order to speak smooth and embrace the fact that she stutters. And so now we have someone who's successful, loving her career as a speech pathologist, and she's out there stuttering. And Carol Alexander, who many of the people in this audience probably are well aware of, has taken the challenge that was in his life and used it to create probably the most innovative healing vehicle in the world for young people who stutter. And not only is he running in New York at no cost to the families who use this, a theater company just for children and teenagers who stutter, but this summer he had the inaugural season of a arts camp so kids who stutter can find out that life is really about expressing yourself through art, song, dance, poetry, acting, fun. And it was a huge hit, and I have a feeling not only will the theater and the camp continue here in New York and in the U.S., but I see this as a prototype, and that's what Taro has done with his stuttering.
Greg and I were pretty sure we just got a brochure accepted today that we wrote for teenagers who stutter, and we so love Taro and are so impressed by Taro that when we made a list of famous people who stutter, we put Taro on the list and wrote that he's a cool person who stutters, and we included his photo, and we hope that his photo goes up there next to James Earl Jones and Marilyn Monroe because that's where he belongs.
Gotta be honest too. I'm kind of jealous because when I was a kid, I didn't have this sort of opportunity, you know. But I mean, he gets it, you know. And not only does he get it, he actually took, you know, the next 15 or 20 steps and said, I'm not only going to get it, I'm actually going to do something about it. And, I mean, what he's doing is fantastic.
I want to jump in on that comment, Greg, and say that make sure that you don't underestimate the power of what you've created and the vehicles that you're going to use to change the attitudes and orientations of a whole generation of professionals who in turn are going to have a profound impact on young people who stutter. So each person has their unique contribution, not one more or less than the other.
Well, okay. I do appreciate that.
But Tarot's still pretty freaking cool. And Phil, we wanted to get on to our big topic of the day, which is the body and soul of speech therapy. I wanted to let our listeners know that Dr. Schneider helped us inaugurate our Stuttering 101 podcast. So if you go to stuttering101.com, the very first episode is Dr. Schneider speaking about stuttering and breathing. So Phil, a few weeks ago, you were talking to Greg and I, and you had mentioned that speech therapy has a body and a soul. Can you help us understand what you mean by that?
Well, I'm going to start by giving you two references, because the thoughts I'm going to share are abstracted from two books. They're not original thoughts, so if anything's wrong, it's my fault, and if anything's great, it's theirs.
Okay.
By Dr. Suzuki, on the philosophy of teaching violin to young children, and it's worth a read. And the other is a book by a Dr. Twersky on character development, and it's called Lights Along the Way. So the title I've given to these few thoughts I'm going to share now are Soulutions for Growth in Speech Therapy. And Soulution is S-O-U-L. So what do I mean by using this word soul? I'll try and clarify that. There are important parts of our lives which no one can see and no one can hear. These are our dreams, our drives, our values, our fears, our beliefs, and all of those are invisible. But it is those no things that determine the choices we make about what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. And these no things, because they're not things, are a major part of the speech therapy process, whether we think about them or we don't think about them. But I chose to talk about them because I have a belief that by thinking about it, by each of us thinking about these elements, we can increase the meaningfulness of the therapy process, both for the therapist and the person who is seeking support. So I'm going to try and talk about body and soul on a couple of levels. First about communication, then about stuttering, and then about therapy. So first, speech communication. We can think of it as having both a body and a soul. The body of speech communication is what we spend most time talking about, reading about, and training, dealing with. That consists of the sounds of words and of our voice and the movements that we make to create those sounds. The soul of speech communication, however, is the drive, the inner drive inside of us to experience a sense of togetherness, and to experience the togetherness by linking up through the freedom of expression. And that's why I'm on the phone now. That's why you've created this vehicle, so that we want to, for people to know what we're thinking, each other. And that's a special desire. Stuttering also has a body and a soul. It affects the body by imposing involuntary interruptions on the flow of speech. But it affects the soul by disconnecting people from their dreams, sometimes from their integrity, sometimes from their freedom of speech, and sometimes from their desire to experience togetherness. And unlike other speech disorders, the stronger a person desires to connect with others, often the more intense the struggle of stuttering. So now I'm going to go to the body of these comments, which is speech therapy. Speech therapy needs both a body and a soul. The body of speech therapy is what we're most focused on and familiar with, and that's what's talked about in research. And it consists of developing skills through various exercises which are designed to enhance the ease of speaking, to reduce the frequency of interruptions, and to increase the ability of a person to cope efficiently with the interruptions when they occur. That's the body. I'm not going to spend time there because that's something we're familiar with. It's important, and I'm not saying it's not part of the work. It is a central part of the work, but I want to focus on the soul of the therapy because the soul of the therapy is what directs and empowers the body. Its goal, the soul component, the solution aspect, its goal is to draw out greatness within the person, which is already in there. So solutions strengthens a person's belief in their own inner potential for growth. And at the same time, it enhances their inner dignity, their determination, and their sense of purpose. So the soul elements are like the seeds of a tree. They are the seeds of this process which contain all of the energy needed for the tree to produce fruit at some point in the future. So I have a teacher and friend named David Aaron who's fond of saying, and I know I've said it on your show before, that we're not human beings. We're really human becomings. We're designed and meant to struggle. And in fact, we experience our deepest gratification from achieving things which are both difficult and meaningful. And when we fight our way out of entrapment and places where we're stuck and strive for freedom, we experience joy and we experience fulfillment. And along here is the reality that people are capable of embracing discomfort in the present in order to work hard and create something better in the future. And a person who orients their life in this way can see beyond the present circumstance and find meaning in the challenges that life presents. Every single one of us, and this is a point Suzuki makes repeatedly, is capable of enhancing our abilities. Persistent effort over time, in fact, has shown that many people who stutter become outstanding communicators. And not only that, many people who struggle with stuttering become outstanding people. So proper attention, follow through with proper action, that's a winning soul solution. So I'm going to take just a few more moments and identify a few of the soul elements that I'm alluding to. I'll list them first. Willpower, determination, inner dignity, awareness, responsibility, and the last one, something called a safe house relationship. So I'll start with willpower. Therapy needs to harness a person's willpower. That's power. That power serves to resist the negative patterns of the past and to help people habituate new responses. That power, that willpower, I will, facilitates patience and persistence, which allows an individual to plod forward one small step at a time. And I heard this analogy, which I like, that when you're working in small steps, you need to remember that raindrops ultimately fill an ocean. And also raindrops can drill a hole in a rock. So to do this, to plod along like that, people need to clarify and focus their goals. And that's one of the solutions in therapy, is to talk about why change. Why do you want to change? What do you want to change? In a soul solution approach, the goals also need to be meaningful goals and not simply attempts to cover a problem up. Solution number two, determination. The therapy process, the dialogue, the relationship needs to help people strengthen their determination to make sacrifices in the present. And why? Because they anticipate success in the future. They have to be able to anticipate success and tolerate failure. Because when you're on one of these, learning anything new, anticipating success, but in the short haul, it means you're going to fail a lot because you're doing things that are unfamiliar, uncomfortable, foreign. The quest for change requires the ability to be strong, to stay on course, to follow your convictions about what's best for you, in spite of a lot of cultural pressure and peer pressure to do otherwise. So it takes determination to have that strength. Determination can prevent a person from a big downfall, which is delay. People sometimes, they get all fired up in a therapy session. I'm going to do this. This seems like the right thing to do. What a great idea. But then they delay before they take action. And that enthusiasm of the thought of change wanes very quickly and very easily. So what a person needs with their determination is quick follow-through. When you have the thought, when that thought is fresh, act. Determination also builds courage. And courage is a very interesting thing. Courage is the ability to choose to do the right thing, even when it's scary and difficult and there's a price. That's courage. Solution number three, inner dignity. Inner dignity is a very special thing. It's a feeling that you as a person are unconditionally good, that you're unconditionally lovable. It means you don't have to do anything to earn it, and that you matter and that you make a unique difference in this world. That inner dignity, that quality, that experience is developed very early in life and stems from the way our parents attend to us, the way they look at us when we're babies and little children, the way they listen to us, the way they run to respond to our needs. That's how it gets built. Therapy relationships can nurture that inner dignity, and we do that by the way in which we listen and attend and validate the experience of the other person coming to us. If a person comes into therapy and they're shame-based early in life, they weren't able to get what they needed to experience inner dignity, that inner dignity may be suppressed. And without it, people cannot believe that they have the potential for growth, and they can't tolerate failure. And therefore, they could be trapped in a state of denial because they won't feel the pain, and they'll be blindly enslaved to their past patterns. So inner dignity is important. Solution number four, awareness. This is a key solution in therapy, awareness. Awareness of what's going on in your life, that is, what's going on physically at the moment that it's going on, of what your thoughts are when they're going on, of what your feelings are when they're going on. Awareness of what we want to bring about in our lives. Awareness of how we stop ourselves from pursuing those dreams. Awareness of what we need to do, what action we need to take to fulfill those dreams. Awareness leads to options, and those options cause us to begin to self-adjust, to make changes in the way we think, in what we believe to be true, and in the way we behave. And we need to remember here with this awareness thing that we don't need to learn anything new. We just need to be repeatedly reminded of what we already know, but somehow continuously push out of consciousness. So to realize growth, a person then needs to be aware and accepting of two kinds of discomfort. Because, again, denial, which is the opposite of awareness, gets rid of the discomfort. I don't know what's going on. I don't know that it's bothering me. And I don't have to do anything about it. But to grow, to maximize who we can be in this world, we need to be aware and accept two kinds of discomfort. First, we need to actually allow ourselves to experience the discomfort of the status quo. What do I not like about the way my life is right now? And then we need to tolerate the long discomfort of sacrificing pleasure in the present to achieve something better in the future. And remember that we have a natural drive which we share with all animals, which is to seek pleasure and avoid distress. We yearn for a state of tranquility. You know, sounds great. I'd love to be laying on the beach and do nothing. And to resist awareness, so they don't have to be bothered by things. I'll sort of like blank out a little bit. And that fosters denial. That natural tendency toward inertia maintains the status quo and kills dreams of change by blocking awareness. It alleviates discomfort, but it prevents growth. The therapy session, the time together, provides a time, a place, and a partnership for continuous reminding and refocusing on awareness while slowly, slowly, slowly chipping away and weakening a tendency toward denial. Solution number five, responsibility. Therapy needs to nurture the ability to respond, to respond to the circumstances of one's life just the way they are, my body, what's going on in the world, what's going on in relationship with other people, and to respond to those circumstances by making choices as opposed to reacting like a reflex, quickly and without thought. And this kind of responsibility is a two-step process. One, it begins with the ability, and this takes strength and it takes development, to reject quick, counterproductive responses of the past. So first I have to say no to my old pattern. That's one piece of work, and I need to be responsible for doing that. And then before I respond in a new way, I have to ask myself, what is really best for me? What is best maybe for the world? What's best for my relationships in the long haul, even though those things might be uncomfortable in the moment? And I need to put a little pause between the stimulus and the response so I can begin to experience freedom of choice. And the last solution I'm going to mention here is the soul house, the safe house of the therapy relationship. Often in our lives, we want to grow, but we can't grow alone. We need a very special friend, a special friendship, a special relationship to use that relationship as a guiding force, as a sounding board, so that we can get from the relationship a new perspective. And also, when you're in a real relationship of integrity, it creates a bond of accountability. I want to come back to the discussion, and I want to bring back what I was talking about. I feel it's a place to keep it alive. That therapy relationship creates something that I've heard called, and I'm thinking of it in terms of a safe house. It's a timeless place where you can go and receive unconditional acceptance, unconditional support, guidance, encouragement, and never-ending optimism that you have within you the ability to grow into something amazing. And then the thing about the safe house of the relationship is it has to transcend time, because there are seasons in our lives of readiness. We're ready to tackle problems in our lives in different ways at different times. And in particular, the challenge of stuttering, we're ready to tackle it in different ways, different parts of it, at different seasons in our life. So the safe house relationship is a place that could be returned to in the future when you hit another season of readiness. So I'm just going to summarize, and then we'll have some chance to interact, I hope. Speech therapy needs a body and a soul. And we know about the body parts, we have to think about the soulful components. The soulful elements of therapy underlie the ability to sustain the long, hard work on the body. And in fact, if it's done well, the work of improving ourselves on a physical level will continue long after the therapy process has ended. Soulful speech therapy is not only geared to developing great communicators, but it's really geared to developing the greatness of a person. Ultimately, if this works well, the challenge of stuttering will help build greatness in both people in the process.
Well, I have a bunch of questions I want to ask you, Phil. How about we take a little break, come back, and we'll hitch up with our questions.
Super.
Hi, this is Russ Hicks. And believe me, if you stutter, you're not alone.
You're back with StutterTalk.com. I am Peter, here with a very coffee and sneezy Greg Grapeshot Snyder.
Thanks.
Dr. Philip Schneider. Phil can be reached at SchneiderSpeech.com. And Phil, I first wanted to make a comment that you've been speaking about the body and soul of speech therapy, and it's so refreshing that you're going through willpower and determination and courage and awareness, and you're not taking this route that so many professionals go down of just shoving information down your client's throat. The level of respect you have for your clients and how they feel on the inside about these issues is tremendous. Could you talk a little bit more about the importance of raindrops? Because, you know, us stuttering folk, we're so hard on ourselves. We often think we have to make these huge changes. And sometimes we know where we want to be and we get mad at ourselves if we don't get there immediately. Just how important are these raindrops?
Well, it has to do with a basic philosophy in our lives. And we're in a culture which says you can just do anything quick. Everything's quick. Fast food, quick solutions to problems. And there's another, you know, philosophical orientation, which is our lives are about changing the world, changing ourselves, and through doing that, changing the world around us. And that's what challenges are about. There's a wonderful book by a man named Viktor Frankl who talks about how living through the Holocaust in Europe and being incarcerated in the death camps, you know, how he developed a whole psychology, a theory of psychology about how we construe the difficult circumstances we're in really determines the quality of our lives. And I think that I've learned this from many people who stutter, that stuttering is a very tough thing. And that the idea that there's a quick cure, you know, yes, there are intensive programs that say if you work hard for a few weeks, you can taste what it might be like.
That's really perfect. Develops. What you just said is perfect.
I think that it's okay to immerse oneself, like going to, you know, fat camp. You can find out what it would be like to exercise a great deal each day and eat smaller quantities of food. So you can get a taste of that, but it doesn't mean you go home and you've been changed on the inside, on the core, at the root, or at the soul level, what it would mean to struggle with that battle every day. And so life is about struggle. And most things of value involve struggle. People who are successful in business, they don't get there in a flash. Someone envies someone who got into a profession which might have taken 10, 15 years of training to be a surgeon or something. But people sacrificed a great deal, or people who overcome struggles with weight, struggles with psychological battles, struggles with stuttering. They're long, hard-fought battles. And so it's important for each of us in our own lives, whatever our struggles are, if we can, to say, you know what, I did one small thing in the right direction today. That was awesome. That took energy. That took a dream. Maybe tomorrow I'll get to two. Because it's very easy to, and this is very common for people who enter into speech therapy with stuttering. They come in with a huge challenge that they've experienced millions of times. And in a few weeks, they go like, you know, I'm still having that problem. So I think our expectations of change being a long process, and being able to celebrate the victory of being a master of your own challenges, is something that requires a lot of nurturance from parents and therapists and teachers.
I want to ask you about accepting discomfort from the perspective of both a person who stutters and a therapist. What do you say to the speech therapists out there who basically would ask you, well, how can I help my clients to accept their discomfort? And then what would you say, or how do you go about encouraging or supporting your clients in accepting discomfort?
I think the best way to help a person that you care about who is going through pain of any sort is to give them the time to talk about it and to validate it. You know, I haven't personally lived with the challenge of stuttering, but it doesn't take a lot of imagination to realize that it looks very frustrating, humiliating, embarrassing, stressful, and it would be easy to see how it could kill a person's spirit. So I think that by making it clear, it's okay, as we do with people that we're close to in any part of our lives, that it's really okay to talk about it and to make sure we don't demean it. We don't take away the meaning of a person's pain. We don't go, oh, you know, it's really not so bad, and, you know, there are other things that are worse. So I think we need to validate people's experience of how uncomfortable this is. And we need to validate. Every session I tell people, you know, like I say, you know, I'm here to be your cheering squad. But I have to tell you, I don't think I could do better than you. I have to remind people that while I might be in the role of the coach or the cheering squad or the therapist, doesn't mean I think I could do any better. It doesn't mean I believe I wouldn't suffer as much or have as much trouble with discipline and trying to make change. So I remind people of that. I try not to be arrogant. Stuttering is hard, and it's very, for many people, it's a very persistent thing. And you can chip away. It doesn't mean it disappears. It means you had one victory, you had another victory, but you're still dealing with a big challenge.
And do you think there's different points in a person's life where they're ready to face this soulful, S-O-U-L, soulful elements of therapy?
Well, I think it goes on all the time. I think even when you start with young children, as a therapist, and when we're doing it with children who are our own children, or children that we're working with professionally, that's when we can start to build values. That's when we start to teach kids that a real hero is not someone who things came easy to. A real hero is someone who took a difficult challenge and turned it into something through a lot of hard work. Those are values, and they are the underpinnings of solutions. Are you working with a child, and all of a sudden they stop and say, wow, you know, that was bumpy, you know? And they're like, wow, that's amazing. You started to notice what you were doing and to really think about it, to bring about a change? That's amazing. That's how the world has changed. So you can take the raindrop and let them know that that raindrop is the seed of something much larger. And so I think the therapist has to really help a person realize that, you know, that again, when you make a small step in the right direction with a challenge, you're a bigger hero than someone where it came easy.
Right.
The thing which I continually tend to get frustrated on, and I find myself easily kind of beating myself up over it, is when I'm teaching our future speech pathologists about stuttering and stuttering therapy. They're eager to know about the body, but they're afraid to really get in touch with the soul. And it's a struggle for me, because I know that with just the body of speech therapy, it's just really only half of it. What are some maybe ways or tips or approaches that the soul could be better taught or better expressed to other speech pathologists?
Well, it's going to take a lot of time to change the culture of a profession. Most of the culture of the Western world, including speech pathologists, still believe people stutter because they're nervous or anxious. So it's going to take a long time for this profession and people in it to realize that what counts most in this world is how people feel and not how people look or sound on the surface. Our history as a profession comes out of cosmetics, you know, speak the right way, diction, you know, voice and diction classes. We're really a health profession, and it's more important that a person feels beautiful than that somebody else thinks that they look like the cover of a magazine. And so perhaps we have to be very careful about what we teach and don't teach in our classes, because somehow if they look at how much time you spend on each thing, at the end of the semester, that's how they continue the overall conception of what's important. But if you ask them what's more important, how you hit the baseball or how you feel about playing, you know, or anything else, it's how you feel that's more important than the physical. So I think more than answering your question in the moment that we have, it's identifying it as a challenge and a direction for our profession that I have to work on. That's why we're having this talk, that you have to work on. We have to ask ourselves honestly what's most important in our lives. Is it how many times today you had a little interruption, a little hiccup in your speech? Or is it whether you feel that things are going well in your home, with your family, and that the way in which you treat people at work? And so we have to really ask those questions about our own values, about what's important. And then we have to bring that into the classroom and into our teaching. And then we have to treat the students the way we want them to treat other people. And build their inner dignity. We have to see each of our students in the same kind of model, and so we can nurture their soulfulness, because the soulfulness is within everybody, and the ability to grow. I think Peter said the thing about information and being a lecturer. If we really believe that everybody has the ability to find their own way, and that we're just sort of a partner in the process, I gave a talk at Asher called The Midwife in the Process, but that the real stuff is all coming from within, then I think we'll help change the orientation from just thinking of it as nuts and bolts, like learning how to just do something mechanical versus something much larger.
To help people who stutter, or to support them in getting to their inner dignity and defining their courage and responsibility, is there one piece of advice you would give a beginning speech therapist in how to counsel or how to help a person who stutters find these soulful elements?
First of all, a certain kind of work is not for everyone. Working on a lisp is much more grounded in a mechanical. Coping with stuttering in a person's life is a much more sophisticated issue. And so it's not necessarily the kind of work that would fit well for someone who's just trying to figure out who they are in the world. They might be 24 years old or 25 and have just finished spending their whole life as a student and haven't really discovered, you know, their own adult life, and they may be busy covering up their own insecurity. Someone at that stage of life would not be the most soulful therapist. Somehow you have to go through a lot of pain, a lot of mistakes in your life, and a lot of challenge to get to the place where you understand challenge and you understand transcending challenge. So I think that if a person who's a new professional does engage in this kind of work, number one, they should have a good mentor, someone to call and talk to. They should strive for honesty, sensitivity. They should know that they're going to feel inadequate in the process, and they should really respect and honor and listen. You can't hurt a person when you listen. And if you really listen to a person and care about what they're saying and treat people with the utmost respect, then those people, the best stuff will come out of them, and you're along for the ride. You don't have to direct it. So the last thing I'll say there is you mentioned the word, how would you counsel? So as far as the grammar of that sentence or the question, how would you counsel? To me, counseling, the closest synonym for counseling is listening. So the more you want to help a person who has a problem that has a lot of feelings attached to it, the more you have to stay quiet and listen. And Woody Starkweather talked a lot about honoring resistance. Really honoring and respecting the other person is the best way to help them connect with their inner dignity and their own inner ability to find solutions to their own dilemmas.
Oh, thank you, Phil. I think that is a great place for us to leave it. You've been listening to StutterTalk.com here with very special guest, Dr. Philip Schneider, who can be contacted at SchneiderSpeech.com. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Greg.